Welcome to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. I'm here today to talk about January, specifically Human Trafficking Awareness Month. On the show prior to this has been the Assistant Director of Westmoreland County's Children's Bureau, Jason Slonczewski. He's been a wonderful guest and a wonderful advocate talking about all of the examples and awareness activities happening in Westmoreland County about human trafficking. New to the show is Renee Ritz. She is the Executive Director of the Blackburn Center. Thank you so much to the both of you for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you. We're excited.
Jason, thanks for returning to the show. You know, this, you can tell that you're so passionate about this because you were the one the last time we talked and you said, Jennifer, put me on your calendar. Make sure that we are back out there in January talking about human trafficking. So let's start from the beginning. Can you define human trafficking? Because it's not necessarily what everybody thinks.
Right. So with human trafficking, I think there's two different aspects of human trafficking. There is labor trafficking and there is sex trafficking. So I'm going to kind of define both for you, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So labor trafficking is the involuntary servitude. It's a condition of servitude induced by any means or scheme or pattern intended to cause a person to believe that, if they leave this, there may be some danger to themselves or some kind of danger to their family, or that they can't leave this. Perhaps they have to pay off a debt or something to the person. That's kind of the labor trafficking that traditionally we're looking at the work we do. The second would be the sex trafficking, which at the Children's Bureau is what we see more of with the population we're working with. And that would be defined as sex trafficking is the recruitment, harboring, transportation, patronizing, or soliciting of a person for the purpose of commercial sex. And the key part of that piece is commercial sex, is that there has to be some kind of either monetary or even a non-monetary exchange, between people regarding a sex act.
I remember once you told me that this is happening behind closed doors in homes of Westmoreland County, parents seeking drugs, using their own children as pawns in these schemes.
Yeah, we have had a history of that. We've had, kids that are using social media and, people are finding kids, through social media in that way too. There are, it's out there. It's not just something that happens in the cities. People who are perpetrating these crimes are finding their victims wherever they can.
Renee, I'm sure this is a topic very near and dear to your heart. Before we specifically start talking about human trafficking, let's give everybody at home some detail on the Blackburn Center in general, in case they haven't heard of it.
Absolutely. Blackburn Center, we're the victim service agency in Westmoreland County. So we work with victims of all crimes, including domestic violence, sexual assault, labor trafficking, financial exploitation. Our services are at no cost. They're to provide to men, women, and children. And the first step I always say is contact our hotline if you have questions. 1-888-832-2272. We'll provide you with as much guidance as we can. And if we can't provide the service, we'll connect you with someone that can. So please reach out. But you're right, this has been something that's not new. Human trafficking is not something that just started 5 years ago. We have many clients that we've worked with for years that are older now, that they were trafficked when they were children, but there was no label around it. It wasn't defined labor or human trafficking or sex trafficking, because when you hear human trafficking, you think of what you see in the movies. You don't think of your parents exploiting you for rent or for drugs, like you and Jason were just discussing. So I think it's really important for the public to understand that this isn't something new. It's just there's more education, more conversations around this topic, and it's getting out there. So people are now starting to understand that human trafficking is not what you see in the media. There's a lot more, or on TV shows, movies, there's a lot more to it, and it's hidden, like you guys had mentioned.
And I think something interesting, Renee had brought up is the money aspect, and I touched base on that. We've had cases where it's an exchange of drugs. You know, hey, you know, I will, you know, if you do this for me, you know, I'll give you, you know, I'll give you drugs. I'll give you marijuana, you know, or hey, you know, if you want to stay here in my house, you have to do this with me, you know. So there's been times where, and that's called, survival sex, where somebody's trading, you know, sex with them in order to stay in someone's house. And that, you know, can, you know, happen a lot with runaways, you know, they don't have a place to go, but they have someone willing to offer that. That kind of falls under that umbrella of sex trafficking, because there's something of value being given in exchange for the sex. Shelter is of value. There's a monetary value to that. So it doesn't have to be, you know, cash. It can be really anything of value.
And what's scary, I think, is what the COVID-19 pandemic has done to this this industry, particularly with the hidden homeless, you know, people who are sort of paycheck to paycheck and sleeping on couches and having to barter for a place to stay. Can either of you speak to that and maybe some examples or what you've seen to that?
If you're okay with it, Jason, I'll go first and then interrupt me in any point, but you're exactly right. And I was just going to bring that up. During COVID, there's a lot of people who traffic know those vulnerabilities. They know that people were hurting. They couldn't afford maybe their rent. So we did hear of some situations where landlords were exchanging, hey, if you do the sex act, I'll take care of your first month's rent. So those were concerns. And if you have a young child too, that was something that we've heard from other agencies was something that was going on specifically with children being exchanged with the landlord because they saw that vulnerability. The parent couldn't afford to stay. So, okay, I'll take care of that first month's rent. Can I spend time with your minor child? So it is it's horrible to think about. It really is. How can somebody do this? But this is what's happening. And I do want to mention, I hope we can come back to this, that a lot of times a trafficker isn't this stranger. It is known to the victim. So I would like to touch on that. But I know, Jason, you have some stories you probably would like to share.
Yeah. So I'll share some data that kind of really lines up with COVID. So I pulled data going back to 2018. So we had a couple of years prior to COVID and a couple of years since COVID had started now. In 2018, we had two investigations for trafficking that we had at the agency here. 2019, we had one. 2020, first year of COVID, we had six. 2021, we had 10. And 2022, we had 10 so far, with a month to go in the year. So even just from that data, you can see since COVID started, you know, our investigations for trafficking has went up a lot, you know, quite considerably. And part of that might be to COVID, and part of that may be to the increase of awareness that's out there regarding trafficking and, you know, making it educating people and making sure they're aware of what trafficking is and what those risks and those red flags are whenever we're looking at these kind of things.
Well, Renee, I mean, let's talk about that. You know, we're talking about awareness. So tell us, I mean, these traffickers are often known perpetrators.
Yes, you're right. So they zone in, they look at vulnerabilities. They look at whether it's the family life. If, you know, you're growing up in a home that where there's substance abuse or violence, or maybe your parents aren't around. So, you know, you're by yourself a lot. They zone in on that. They know that. So it could be a neighbor. It could be a friend. We talked about it being parents. It's a relative, friends. I mean, it's usually somebody known to the victim, and they build that relationship, and there is a grooming process involved in it. And it takes time because they want to build trust with that victim. So then that way it's harder for the victim to say no, or they have that blackmail or some sort of leverage to hold over them so they don't leave. And a lot of times, you know, when you talk to the community and they say, well, with human trafficking, whether it's sex or labor, why don't they leave? And we hear this with domestic violence too. A lot of it is psychological. And that's what they use, whether they do have like physical leverage or something that they hold over them, where you owe me, I've done this for you, I'm the only one that cares for you. They use those tactics. And like I said, they look at those vulnerabilities, and the vulnerabilities are what they use against them.
Right.
So, you know, like we mentioned with substance abuse, if someone is, you know, using Well, they know that. So that's what they use over them. Hey, I'll give you this drug if you do this sex act. Or, you know, I know you need somewhere to live. Or, you know, they zone in on those different things. And survival sex, like Jason had mentioned, is really big with runaways and minors. You know, they do that a lot. And it's just to survive. And it's not even so much a runaway, but it's someone that may not feel safe in their home and need somewhere to go. So they're going to stay with their friend, supposed quote unquote friend, in exchange, they'll provide them with sex and they have a place to stay or food even, you know, they give me food, I'll do that sex act.
Yeah. And the perpetrators, you know, that we're looking at, you know, they're smart, you know, they know how to get information or get power over their victims. You know, in that grooming process, you know, perhaps it started off as, you know, a boyfriend girlfriend situation, you know, and, you know, the girl had, you know, maybe shared some pictures or shared some sensitive information with that person. All of a sudden, that person now has power over that victim, you know, saying, you know, if you don't do this, I'm going to share this information with everyone on your friends list on Facebook, including your mother, your aunts, your uncles, your best friend, everyone at school. And if you're a 15, 16 year old girl, you know, faced with, I could be publicly humiliated in that sense, or I can just have sex with, you know, this guy, you know, who's, you know, willing to pay my boyfriend, you know, $40. That's a hard decision for a young child to make, you know, and there's been documented cases of that happening. It's easier to get a willing victim, you know, than to, you know, grab someone off the street.
Right. Right. Like exactly what Renee was saying, like in the movies where, you know, where they're kidnapped and they're trafficked across the border and things
which
like that.
Yeah, happens.
It does. But not as common as, you know, people would think. Mm-hmm. We see this a lot more in our county than we do the kidnapping off the streets.
Mm-hmm. Jason, what would you say was kind of like a pivotal point where you and your agency, or even you, Renee, and your agency started to see this become more talked about? You know, was this in the last 5 years, would you say?
Well, I would say it was about 2016, maybe 2017. Pennsylvania had passed a law to update the Child Protective Services law, which is what governs all children youth agencies as far as what we can investigate. And the update to it was including labor and sex trafficking as an allegation of child abuse. Prior to that, it wasn't. You know, our investigations had to focus on very specific perpetrators, you know, as family members or caregivers, and human traffickers were not considered a perpetrator unless they fit into one of those other categories. Mm-hmm. But Pennsylvania had changed a law to include human traffickers, regardless of their relationship to the child, as something that fell under the Child Protective Services law. So that's when we could start investigating these and then starting the education with that community as far as what this looks like, and, you know, educating our own staff as to how to recognize it in their own cases, because, you know, that took some work too, because it wasn't something that was always on the forefront that we were looking at, because it wasn't something that we traditionally had investigated prior to that.
Nor did you have jurisdiction to do so.
Right, right.
How about you, Renee? Would you agree the last 6-7 years, this has been, you know, really coming into the limelight?
Yes. In 2015, that's when we expanded our services to other crimes. I mean, we've been providing services to those without kind of labeling it as human trafficking, to those individuals that have been survivors of that, but really putting a focus on it. It was around 2015 when we received, when we expanded our services and we're able to provide the more training and education. We have the human trafficking task force that came to light in 2017 to partner with, you know, Children's Bureau and different agencies to really focus in on that, because it wasn't talked about. And so being able to do that education really has brought in the community to understand human trafficking a little bit better. But what's interesting is, even with our clients, kind of talking to them more and more, like Jason had brought up the best example with intimate partner violence. That's where we would see it a lot, because our main focus at the time was domestic violence and sexual assault. And we would see a lot of clients that were in a domestic violence situation where their abuser was trafficking them. And by that point, you know, they love this individual, right? There's affection. Well, and they think that affection is true love. So they'll do anything for that individual. And so there's that control, the isolation's all in place. So we have been seeing that, but now more and more with working with some of our therapy clients, looking previously when they were, you know, their childhood, and focusing in on how their parents sold them, you know, or their friends did. So it's something that has been ongoing, but really to put a label on it finally and say, this is what it is. I think it's really important for survivors, because at the time you hear about it, but you never kind of connected the pieces together. So I think within the 7 years, really the education has helped a lot for survivors, the community, for everybody.
Yeah. Awesome. I would say even police departments too. You know, police departments, I think a lot of times we're looking at that cash aspect of it, you know, and not considering the non-monetary value issues. And I think all of our agencies, you know, law enforcement, us, you guys have come a long way to really look at what that definition actually encompasses.
Fascinating, but disturbing information today from Jason Slonczewski. He's the Assistant Director of the Westmoreland County Children's Bureau, and Renee Ritz, Executive Director of the Blackburn Center. They're talking about human trafficking awareness this January, how important it is that we all know and understand the signs and know and understand what to do if we see a red flag. We're going to talk more about that after the break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. A very serious topic today, not meant for anyone but adult ears, because this is very, very serious subject that we're discussing, and that is human trafficking awareness. And that is really happening throughout the month of January. And two of the major players in that are the Blackburn Center and the Westmoreland County Children's Bureau. Joining us today, Renee Ritz, she's the Executive Director of the Blackburn Center, and Jason Slonczewski, the Assistant Director of the Westmoreland County Children's Bureau. You two are so knowledgeable and so well-spoken about this, and I can tell you're both so passionate about it. Let's talk about the ways in the past that your agencies have tried to spread the word. Renee, do you want to start with the Blackburn Center and some of the things that you and the combined task force have done in the past to spread that awareness?
Absolutely. So the task force is still fairly new. We started it in 2017, and we're continuing to grow, which is amazing to see kind of how it started and where we're at now. But really, January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month. So we really want to get it out there, provide that education, because we know it's needed. And we understand this is a difficult topic to talk about. A lot of people don't want to discuss it because it's horrible to hear that these things are happening, but it's important that they understand what it is and know really what it is, and not so much what you're seeing maybe on social media or TV and movies. So what we've done in the past is as you guys are probably familiar with, or if not, we have Red Sand projects. So that's something we do in September. So we would do mason jars filled with red sand, and then we'd have a card explaining what Red Sand project is. And we would drop that off at different organizations throughout the month of January. And these are organizations, they could be anywhere. We did at the Transit Authority, the courthouse, and it's just some information. So the red sand catches your eye because it's bright, it sticks out. So you're gonna look towards it, you're gonna read it, and it's gonna explain about red sand, which why we do it, and it's awareness on human trafficking, saying we're not gonna let victims or survivors fall through the cracks. And it talks about, it's a national project we do every year. So those are one of the projects we do throughout January. We leave it out throughout January at the different organizations so that it gets people thinking. And on there has our Westmoreland Human Trafficking Task Force page on Facebook. So they can hop on there, learn more about it. The courthouse, we light it in blue because that's the color of Human Trafficking Awareness Month. I'm not sure what week. It's typically for a week or two, I believe, Jason, that we have it lit. We work with the courthouse on that. So we don't have a date yet. But we're really focusing on continuing to do what we do every year and to continue to grow. So to have a panel discussion with different community members or different organizations that kind of can talk more about human trafficking and bring awareness. We've done that in the past to educate and kind of do breakout sessions to focus in so the community can learn and really look at what is human trafficking, because you may talk to one person where you think, you know, they understand it or maybe have a grasp of it. And then you say something and they're like, wow, I had no clue about this, or I didn't even know this existed or this was happening. So just more educational programs in the community, getting the schools involved, school districts we've been reaching out to, doing different projects. So then maybe we can get the students involved on different projects for the Human Trafficking Awareness Month in January. It's just really, we want it to be something where it's different organizations coming together, thinking of ideas. And that's why each year we continue to grow and think of all the different projects we can do. So if this is something that someone's listening and they want to be a part of it or have an organization they think would be a great idea, we're always eager to talk about it, even if January passed, to kind of start looking at the next year of what we can do. And Jason, I know you've been a part of it with me since the beginning, so I know I missed some things.
I was going to say, I mean, we've had multiple trainings throughout the community, to bring in anyone who cares to learn about human trafficking and what those red flags are, you know, what the kind of things to look for and kind of what it's looking like in our communities. We've had those trainings in schools. We've done trainings with schools on that. The Westmoreland County Human Trafficking Task Force has a very active Facebook page that is updated pretty frequently with resources that are available, with stories, you know, that you know, highlight human trafficking issues locally and nationally, you know, if there's something, you know, nationally that is relevant to the work that we're doing as well. But the members on the task force really work well. They bring a wide variety of experiences and perspectives that's really valuable.
I'm sure. And, you know, communicating that message, communication is such a big piece of all of this. And I think that's probably why the task force comes together to say, we want to send out the same message to everyone the same way and have the same resources available. And I thought it was interesting when you were talking about even education with police departments. I mean, these local police are on the front lines of this, right, Jason?
Right. Yeah. Police, you know, laws are being updated and changed and highlighted all the time. And it's important that everyone's kind of kept on the same page with these things. Mm-hmm. We always like to work with our local police departments to find out, you know, what they're seeing, what trends they're seeing, not just in human trafficking, but, you know, for, you know,
children. Yeah. Children in general, victims.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and keeping those lines of communication open, having those conversations. When we get referrals, you know, human trafficking referral, we automatically have to engage the police in those as well. You know, so when we're doing our investigation, the police are also, you know, doing a concurrent investigation and gathering their information as well. So we've always had a good relationship and a good collaboration with the police departments in our area.
All right. Well, let's talk specifically about this process then. If someone out there listening feels a red flag, right? Knows maybe a teenager who's sort of in transition, right? You know, not a great home life, sleeping on different friends' couches, you know, maybe feels like someone's taking advantage of them. What do they do, Jason? I mean, like, it's scary for regular people to call the police. I mean, you know, how does that work?
Right. So the state child line, which is where anyone can report child abuse and neglect. Their number is 1-800-932-0313. And you can call and leave your information, or you can call anonymously, you know, if you're concerned about any kind of retaliation or anything like that. Regardless, we're not allowed to, you know, when we're doing our investigations, we're not allowed to disclose who the referral source is. But still, some people, you know, they want to remain anonymous and they have every right to do that. But by calling Childline, that gets the report to us. And also gets that report to the police as well, because Childline will send out the report to both places just to make sure that, you know, nothing has fallen through the cracks and the people that need to get that information are getting that information.
So I'm sure you receive dozens and dozens of child lines every week, but every single one is looked at, correct?
Yeah, child line makes a determination whether or not it is a child abuse referral or just a general referral. Mm-hmm. General referrals would be ones where there is not abuse already alleging, mm-hmm. that there's, you know, maybe some risk factors. Mm-hmm. But if it's if child line listed as an abuse referral where, yeah, abuse is happening, then yeah, every abuse referral is 100% investigated and reported back to child line with what that outcome is within 60 days.
And then that would be handed over to the police. So let's say then this moves forward, the police do an investigation, they prosecute, then in comes the Blackburn Center, right, Renee? This is where the Blackburn Center comes in. Talk about your role in that then.
Sure. And I do want to mention too, we've had callers contact us because they were suspicious. They had red flags. We are mandated reporters of child abuse. So if they do provide us with that information, most likely we have to make the report and we let them know prior to. But sometimes they call us even before and then we have to make a child line report. So sometimes it's even before that. But typically, like you're right, that would be we come in when there are criminal charges possibly placed, or if a parent or the survivors themselves are reaching out because they want some sort of support, whether it's in the legal proceedings, counseling, therapy. They may need shelter depending on if it was their partner trafficking them. So depending on the direction, we would do our best to provide that service. So there's a lot of, it's so situational. It's hard to kind of pinpoint.
No, that was excellent. Yeah. Excellent.
But I'm glad that we're able to provide all these services. It just depends on the direction of that individual and what they want to see. But sometimes we meet them at the criminal proceedings and then we provide them with support and do our best to navigate them and get them connected to other resources if we may not be the best resource for them at the time.
So how can people donate to your cause, Renee?
Yeah. So if you go to our website, blackburncenter.org, you can go to, at the top, it will say donations and we have a wish list. Our wish list is updated once a month and it's the needs of our clients. So if you are interested, feel free to go to our website. If not, you can give us a call on our main line at 724-837-9540 and ask us if there's anything in particular and we'll let you know even over the phone if you don't want to go online.
Wonderful. Jason, you were about to say something too.
No, I was going to just share also that the work that we do with the Blackburn Center is when we do identify victims of human trafficking, we do refer them to the Blackburn Center for a formal assessment to kind of get a full picture as far as what's happened to this victim, to help prepare that, you know, prepare that person, you know, for healing and prepare that person for how they're going to be able to move forward in their lives.
Jason, if people want to know what's going on with the task force and what's happening with Human Trafficking Awareness Month in January, where would you recommend they go?
I would recommend the Blackburn Center as far as contacting for that. They're the ones that are chairing the Human Trafficking Task Force at this time. So Renee would have that information.
So they can reach out to us. They can contact either the hotline number or the office number. It's on our website, both numbers, and just ask, hey, I'm following up about Human Trafficking Awareness Month, want some additional resources. We'll get them connected and fill them in with what we have planned and how they can help us with January.
Westmoreland County is blessed to have you both. Jason Slonseski, the Assistant Director of the Westmoreland County Children's Bureau, Renee Ritz, Executive Director of the Blackburn Center. You are both very, very educational guests today. You have a very difficult job and you know, our thoughts are with you as you continue through the calendar year of 2023. And I look forward to seeing all the good work that you're about to do. Thank you both.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Thanks for listening.